Welcome to the Fit Girl Magic Podcast. If you are ready to find your inner magic, develop great habits, and a rock steady mindset to feel confident, comfortable, and fit in your body, you are in the right place. I am Kim Barnes Jefferson, and I'll be giving you weekly doses of health, fitness, and life tips sprinkled with humor and real talk. If you're ready to be consistent without the stress of perfection, magic makers, it's time to slip into your favorite pair of PJs, grab some coffee, kick back, and listen to today's show. Hey, magic makers, I have a great episode for you today. Today, I have Suzette Smith here as my guest, and to say that she is passionate is an understatement. She is a passionate beacon for breast cancer. She lost her mom to breast cancer about 30 years ago, and she vowed to prioritize herself given what she saw her mom going through. And she was vigilant about getting regular mammograms given her age, given her history, yet she herself developed breast cancer. And she found it herself. And so she has been on a mission to make sure that women are regularly examining their breasts as well as getting mammograms, and also being an advocate for women of color. Because women of color, if you might not know this, are marginalized a lot in the medical society as far as feeling that they don't understand their bodies, that their pain tolerance isn't as high or as low as what is deemed in the medical profession. And they sometimes get pushed to the back of the bus. And so today, Suzette talks about her journey in her breast cancer journey. She also talks about how she's now become the advocate to make sure that women know what services are available, what monetary services are available, so they can really fight breast cancer the best way possible. So have a listen and let me know what your thoughts are about this. And if you have any experience with breast cancer, please, please make sure you're getting your regular mammograms and you are doing monthly self-exams. This week's iTunes review is brought to you by ML Martell. She writes, 5 stars, Kim is more than just knowledgeable in just health and fitness. She is supportive, reassuring, and on the level. She gives it to you straight, just the way most people need it. Well, thank you so much, Michelle. I really appreciate that review. And you too can review Fit Girl Magic Podcast. Just go to iTunes or wherever you subscribe to this show, and just leave me a 5-star review. I love them. I take them to heart. I just want to make sure that I'm bringing you the best stuff. So thank you so much for all of you who have left me a review so far. I can't wait to highlight you.
Okay, magic makers. Today is a topic that all of us need to hear about. I don't know about you, but probably in the last 5 or 6 years, I have found a number of people, an inordinate amount of people in my life that have been affected by breast cancer. And I'd say 80% of them have found it on their own. And they've had to be their own health advocates for this. And these are women who are young. They're not old women who, you know, happen to fall into breast cancer. They are young women. And today I have Miss Suzette Simons, and she falls into that category as well. She found it herself, and she is now an advocate for why you need to continue to do breast screening so that you can take control of your own health. Welcome to the show, Suzette.
Thank you for having me, Kim. I'm so excited to be here, and I'm so excited to talk about boobs. I love talking about boobs now because that's all that I aspire to. I aspire to be America's next top cancer survivor, and I aspire to be your black breast friend too, because I didn't find it on my own. What it was my mom had died of breast cancer 30 years ago. And so from that, I had made a promise to take care of my health. And so I was really diligent about getting mammograms, you know, especially with the connection of my mother. You know, it didn't matter how young I was. I was always going to get mammograms.
Hey, magic makers. I think we can talk about anything by now. Have you been struggling to lose weight, especially around the belly? You know, it just feels like the weight just settles there and it moves in and it just won't move out. You have brought this up to your doctor thinking that something is definitely wrong, and they tell you you need to eat more, eat less, and exercise more. And you're like, well, I've been doing that and nothing has worked. And then the worst is when your doctor pats you on the knee and just says, oh, honey, it's menopause. Eye roll. Seriously, ladies, it is not your fault. And it's not fair. There are so many myths and misconceptions out there about belly fat. And it is really hard to know what works and what actually doesn't work. Don't worry, I got you. Help is on the way. In this free masterclass I have upcoming called Cracking the Belly Fat Code, I will teach you everything you need to know what the heck is belly fat, and finally, how to get rid of this stubborn belly fat so that you no longer feel like you're stuck with it for life. So if this sounds like something you're interested in, do me a favor, grab a spot on the waitlist so when all the juicy details come out, you'll be the first person to know. Enjoy the episode.
And so I got a mammogram and they asked me on December 31st, 2019, and they asked me to come back. And I had actually always come back anyway, because I have dense breasts. And that's a lot of things with Black women, is that we have dense breasts.
Yeah.
And so the overall theme about this is like, you have to advocate for yourself. Mm-hmm. So, like, yeah, so somebody says that you have dense breasts and that you shouldn't worry about it, you should still be concerned and try to get another kind of screening. Mm-hmm. And so they asked me to come back. And yeah, lo and behold, on January 15th, 2020, I found out I had breast cancer. And so, so the thing is, I guess my mantra is that people need to also be doing breast self-exams, because mm-hmm. that is important to try to always know like what your normal is. And then every month, like look at your breasts and kind of figure out like, is something different? And it doesn't have to be a lump. It could be your skin could be red. Your skin could be hot to the touch. Your breast could change shape. It could be leakage, you know, fluid leaking from you. It, you know, there could be veins popping out of your skin. Just anything that's different from what you're used to, and you should do it right. The same time of the month. That's why they say you should do it on the first of the month. So, so you just have to be diligent about it. And I wasn't diligent about the breast self-exams. Mm-hmm. I was diligent about the mammograms, thinking that that was like the end all be all. But right, lo and behold, and then as we went along, I mean, like, you know, I was like, oh, I got this, because I had been like doing everything every year. But, you know, like they were like, oh yeah, it'll be simple because, you know, you've been doing your mammogram, so it'll be small. It wasn't small. I mean, I was like stage 1, stage 2. And then it was, you know, well, you don't have to get, you know, you could get a lumpectomy and radiation. You don't have to get a bilateral mastectomy. You don't have to get a mastectomy. But I decided, I was like, you know, that I was just going to go for the bilateral mastectomy. I mean, many doctors, you know, argued against it because, you know, you have a risk of infection and all these other things that happen. But I just, and they say that like the risk of getting cancer in the second breast is lower, but it's not their body, it's my body. Right. And my mom also, like, when she got her surgery 30 years ago, she had one huge boob and she was flat on one side, and then was left with like one huge hanging, dangling boob. So she'd right. walk around the house looking like, you know, like it was like down to her knees. It looked like she was playing a perpetual game of hacky sack. I was like, I have no idea like what that does to the self-esteem of a Black woman. Right. But yeah, I was like, I need to have uniformity. I want two boobs, you know, I want the boob job. Even though, you know, like within, you know, when you have breast cancer, people don't like to say boob jobs, right. which I can agree, because it is an assault on your body. It is. But I mean, I am taking it like, I'm like, you know, to me, it's a win-win. So me and my friends were like, hey, you got new sisters. It's great. It's perky. I mean, it's my way of looking at it positively, but I don't want to ascribe that to the entire community. You can right. call it what you want, but to me, it was a win-win. You know, when you don't have money, you know, you have to look at, you know, like right now I look at my boobs, you know, I look at, you know, like, my baby mama is my plastic surgeon, and my baby daddy is United Healthcare. So my boobie daddy is United Healthcare.
So let's take a step back. So, you know, you were diligent. And I think so many people listening here are probably just as diligent as you were, that, you know, every year you hauled your booty into and you got that mammogram and you're like, I'm good. I'll see you next year. Yeah. And so then they say to you, hey, we saw something, you need to come in. Is that how it had happened for you?
Oh yeah, yeah, you need to come in, we saw something. And then they were like, don't worry about it, you're diligent, it shouldn't be a problem, it'll be small or whatever. We don't, and the thing about cancer is like, it shouldn't, it's a worry when it gets into your lymph nodes, because right. It could go in other parts
a
of
lot
the
of
body.
Places, so, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So they were like, you shouldn't have gone into a lymph node. You're so diligent or whatever. It'll be simple. You just need this lumpectomy, right? So then they, it's supposed to be simple. No, first of all, it's supposed to be simple because I was supposed to not have cancer because I go every year or whatever. So then, yeah, it turns out I have cancer. And they did like a small biopsy from one of the lymph nodes. So, oh, you don't have it in lymph nodes. It won't be too much. You just have to do radiation. And then they did, and then I had opted for the bilateral mastectomy, and that's when they did the surgery, and they discovered, oh, it's a little bit bigger than we thought, and a little bit more advanced, and now you need chemo because it was in the lymph nodes. So it just kind of progressed and progressed. So I got the full gamut of cancer. The smorgasbord, the plate. The plata of everything related to cancer, your cancer treatment. I got chemo, a plate of chemo, and then I got the plate of radiation. So the hair fall, I got it all. I got everything. So, and I live to tell the tale. That's why I'm here today.
Yeah. So, you know, so then, you know, they so when they did the lump out, when they did the lumpectomy, did you still have breast tissue left, or were you kind of like looking at the bigger picture and said, you know what, it probably makes more sense for me to do a double mastectomy?
Oh, they didn't do the, it was a choice. Like, do I do the lumpectomy or do I do the
gotcha.
So I decided just to do the double mastectomy before. Yeah, like when you go into the operation. So
gotcha. So as you were kind of talking about your options, you said, you know, is it possible for me to do this double mastectomy?
Yeah. So yeah, I discussed it beforehand. Yeah, because they ask you that. You sit when you go in for your surgery that day, they ask you your name, your rank, your serial number. And what you haven't done, so that we're all on the same page. Yeah, I'm getting both boobs taken off. I've got cancer in the right breast. You go over it so that they're not like nobody's there to take your toe off.
And so they were trying to protect you by having you keep your breasts, and you were just kind of like, I just want to march forward and not have to deal with any potential future cancer scares in my breast.
Well, this is the thing, is like, you have to decide, it's really important when you have cancer, if you have time to get a second opinion, you know, like, so that's what I did. I got a second opinion and, you know, a breast exam, a third opinion, a fourth opinion. And because I'm single and lonely, I got a fifth one. And by the time I was done, half of New York owed me dinner. It's like I flashed my book to more people in New York than a college co-ed in New Orleans. And so it's just really, really important to get another opinion. And so the opinions differed. So it was up to me to make a decision. I mean, like one, you know, I saw like five different breast surgeons. I saw five different hospitals, six plastic surgeons, three oncologists. So it's whoever you feel comfortable with, because they're going to be the ones that are responsible for your care and that you're going to have to deal with. And so the first breast surgeon I went to, I was like, no way, Jose, I didn't like her. My two girlfriends, me, and they didn't like her either. And then, one doctor was very, that hospital was very clinical and research oriented. And she just spouted a lot of like statistics, like, you know, the statistics of getting cancer again in your breasts is this, and, you know, and then there's a risk of infection and this and this. I was like, no, I just want the boob job. I want them, you know. And another doctor was like, yeah, it's great for uniformity. You have like, you know, your boobs will look the same. And so it's a totally personal choice. And you just have to see, like, you have to make sure that you are comfortable with the team that you're at, your team that you choose.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's the one thing that the takeaway from that piece of conversation is that take the time to find the doctor that's going to make you feel comfortable. Because I know that I've been in a room with a doctor that I was like, oh, hell no. Like I need to get out of here. Like, cause they just don't have that bedside manner. And this is a scary thing for you. You know, like they talk to women like you every day and you're like, but this is me. Like, this is my journey. And I need someone who's going to support me on my journey versus someone who's just going to rattle off the facts.
Exactly. And like, yeah. And you have to like, know, like, don't make sure that you're not feeling bad about yourself. That one way to like kind of circumvent that is to make sure you take friends with you.
Yeah.
Because you're not ever going to gather in this state, like more than 50% probably of what's happening to you. So you take your friends with you. If your friends can't go with you, you take your phone as your friend and you say, can I record this? And you take your phone. And sometimes you can, like, if your friends are available remotely, you can have them call in and listen too. So those were some of the things that I did. But like, yeah, like it's really, really can be scary and the doctors can be intimidating, but you need to know that, like, it's, you know, I think especially too, if you're in a situation where you don't have health insurance and so your options are limited, but like right. I had health, like my mom, I watched my mom go through this and it was just harrowing. Like, you know, like she was, you know, like on one of her final days, she was lying on a gurney in the hallway of a public hospital waiting for hours for a room to become available. And when I walked away briefly, someone had actually stolen her wig, and it wasn't even a wig at that point. It was more like a matted Chewbacca toupee. And I was like, that's when I learned one of life's most important lessons, which is people are desperate for weaves in Brooklyn. I mean, I just couldn't believe it, but it's just like that. It's like, so the thing is, like, you need to know, like, even though if you have ability to go to get different opinions or whatever, do it. Even if you're limited, you need to fight even within that public healthcare system for doctors that respect you and know you.
Right.
You know, can you go to another public hospital? Like, you need to fight for yourself. And also, too, like, you need to know that you can split up your care. Like, I got my surgery done at one hospital, and then I got my cancer and radiation done at another hospital. So I split my care. Like, I after my surgery, I went to talk to the oncologist at the hospital I had the surgery, and I wasn't comfortable with that person. So then I scooted over to the hospital that had that I was more comfortable with, because that was going to be my team. And another thing too about splitting hospitals too is that I learned that like not only are your doctors are your team on your team, but you need to make your social worker on your team, because they know about all the resources.
Right. And they can help you navigate the ins and outs of the hospital system.
Yeah, they know. Yeah, they can get, like, if you're on chemo, a lot of hospitals will give you transportation. They will get, like, one hospital, like, got me a car to, you know, and when I didn't have a car, they got me money. And then, like, yeah, and then one hospital gave me a list of resources to reach out to. And then the other hospital gave me a list of resources, the transportation, and $2,700 in cash.
Wow.
Cha-ching! So cold hard cash in different, like different times. Like, oh, I need it for this. And they got me money, another one, money, money. So, like, you need to just be, like, aware of, like you need to advocate for yourself, and you need to find black doctors. I mean, like, I tried very hard to find doctors of color, and toward when I was actually undergoing my radiation was when I found, I did find a black breast surgeon that I loved. She's the head of, like, a really, like, a public hospital here.
Mm-hmm.
But the only thing that that sort of, like, I was hesitant about working with her with was that the plastic surgeon, you know, it's a team, it's a breast surgeon and a plastic surgeon. The plastic surgery would have been done out of a department that they have at the hospital. And because it's a public hospital, there's no way that I could have been assigned a plastic surgeon. So it was like, whoever was on call that day would have been taking me as a patient. So And not to say anything about it, but it was like, it was just too reminiscent
no,
of like what my mom.
Yeah, no, because it's like, you know, like I want to meet you and be like, this is my, you know, my body, you're respecting it versus some rando who's like, hey, it's Tuesday, I'm going to do a boobs today and then move on to whatever it is that they're going to do.
Yeah, totally, totally. I mean, I don't think doctors are that flippant about it, but
they
yeah.
are. But in your mind, that's how you broke it down. You kind of like,
totally.
It's like you are at Starbucks and Harvey's day off today, so you're going to get the next guy up.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, I really, really loved this. I mean, like, she's been on Oprah and everything. And so, like, I loved her. I felt comfortable with her, but I just didn't like and it's the policy of the hospital that, you know, they can't, like, it's whoever is on call that day is my plastic surgeon. So, and I, you know, I just wanted a personal relationship. So I was trying to find doctors of color, because I thought they would understand me more. And, and then also, I mean, it wasn't just, you know, Black doctors too. Like I talked to like people from Asia and, you know, so it wasn't just the white male doctor that I was going for. So I went with, you know, my surgeon and breast surgeon are white, a male and a female. My breast surgeon is a woman. And then, and very motherly, I love her. So that's great. And then my radiologist she's of Chinese descent, and I love her too. I love my radiologist. I mean, I have a nonprofit called NY Last, and we produce comedy in public spaces. And so we like are now doing comedy, like creating comedy at Lincoln Center. And so my radiologist actually came with her team. They came one night to see one of my shows. And I was like, I know they say they came to see the shows, but I'm pretty sure they just came to check out their work. You know what I mean? No, they're just love my radiologist. And then, and then I got a great dermatologist. My dermatologist, because I, you know, like I lost hair and stuff like that, and I was having issues with that. And you lose your toenails and stuff like that. So the onco dermatologist actually got me, I got to talk at Harvard at his Harvard group, which is great.
Nice.
Yeah, because if I had known that my boobs could have talked me into Harvard, I would have never wasted time on the SATs. I mean, it's so crazy that my boobs taught me into Harvard. And then, and then that same dermatologist got me hooked up last summer. Last summer now, like in August, I got a free 3-week all expense paid trip from La Roche-Posay to visit their like cancer treatment, the cancer treatment that they do at La Roche-Posay for people in France. I got to go to France for 3 weeks, all expenses paid, because of my my onco dermatologist, who I love. So I love my doctors. I found a great team. Go team. You know what I mean? And so and my original oncologist too. I loved him too, and he actually ended up passing away in the middle of my of my treatment. Yeah, he had a heart attack at the hospital.
Wow.
I was like, I don't know, the hospital, but yeah. So it was so sad, but really nice guy, young guy from Ireland, great guy. But anyway, you know, so it's been a whirlwind, but I mean, I'm just so happy to be like, have gone through it. I mean, I didn't feel, and I don't want people, the thing is like, I know it's cancer may seem scary, and I mean, it is scary, but like, I mean, like, and I was kind of like in that mode, like my mind was like, you know, like I've got cancer, whatever. But then my friend called me who had cancer. She was like, she's like, well, what are you gonna do now? She's like, you gonna have a party to celebrate? Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my god. And then it just snapped out, like, yeah, like I was like, yeah, like I am gonna have a, I'm gonna celebrate, I'm gonna have a, and this was during COVID, I was like, I'm gonna have a bye-bye boobies party. So I made like three signs. One said with the shape of a woman, just the shape, right, on each one. And then where the boobs go, I put cupcakes, chocolate cupcakes. And then the first cupcake said like free chemo. The second cupcake had the sprinkles missing on the cupcakes. It was just plain. It just said like post chemo. And then the last one just had like smatterings of frosting. And it said bilateral mastectomy. And so, yeah. So and I just posted that. That was my party. But I also like, the thing is too, like I was devastated, but I also came across this article from about this Pulitzer Prize winner, Lima Bowie, who actually won the Pulitzer Prize for stopping a civil war in her country in Africa because she convinced the women to stop having sex with the men. So basically, basically, the men got a titty strike, right? They got no titties. And when I read that, I was like, oh my God, I was like, that is influential cleavage. I have been living a life with lazy boobs. Like, I did not go through a bilateral mastectomy to have lazy boobs. No lazy boobs. So basically, I've been like working my darndest because, you know, people have forgotten about this 40% mortality rate difference between Black women and white women when it comes to cancer. Like, we get cancer about a little bit less at the rate of white women, but yet we die the most, and nobody knows this. We die the most, we die younger. And so, and I think that it's not so much the, I would want to say breast cancer is a silent killer, but it's the lack of awareness that's really killing us.
Yeah.
I think if Black women knew that they were like, we don't, like, we hear this person gets cancer, but they don't know, like, the numbers say we are, like, we are at risk. And, like, you need to, from the moment anyone gets breast tissue, like, when you're a teenager, your doctor needs to walk you through, you know, with your parent watching or whatever, walk you through, like, how to do your breast self-exams. Like, the moment you get breast, you yeah. are at risk. Anyone. It doesn't matter. Anyone. You know, I mean, like, it's an election year. I want people to vote for boobs. You know, vote for new boob leadership. You know, think about it. It's like, if you're liberal, your boobs may be woke already. Like, you got to woke your boobs. My boobs are woke. And if you're not, if you're MAGA, well, 1 in 8 women get breast cancer. So, hey, MAGA crowd, let's make boobs great again. Okay? Let's make boobs great again. You know, talk about my pillows. Let's talk about my pillows. So everyone needs to be on top of that.
Yeah. So you recommend that everyone not only monthly do their own personal self-exam, but still go in for the mammogram.
Well, I wouldn't say mammograms. I mean, the thing is, like, I mean, if you suspect something, definitely they won't. You'd have to pay for it because the guidelines are that at age 40, insurance pays for your mammogram. But the thing is, like, for Black women, we get cancer so much younger. So by the time you get
to 40.
Your mammogram at 40, right. It's late. Your cancer's late stage. So that's why you need to do monthly breast self-exams so that you can stay aware of what the differences are in your breast. And even if it's a little tiny thing, you see a pimple, like, and it's everywhere. It goes from your lymph nodes. You need to be feeling from your lymph nodes to the lymph nodes underneath your armpit, that and your breastplate area and underneath the boob. Like, it's that whole sort of like Thanksgiving dinner, turkey breast. Like, you got to go all up in here to make sure that you are looking for any kind of signs. And anything is like, from a pimple to your breasts are sore, anything. You march into the doctor and you tell them. And if you don't feel comfortable with that answer, you go to another doctor, because you keep monitoring it, because you know your body better than anyone. And so, like, yeah, if it's a problem, then you go get a mammogram. And if you can't seem to find the help, then the great thing is that, like, after COVID, like, groups popped up of Black women that were supporting Black women. You know, there's, like, you know, Touch BBC and For the Breast of Us and stuff like that. And they have Facebook groups. And no matter how you feel about Facebook groups, I mean, it's a godsend. I mean, you take whatever you want. You can go in when you want. You can stay out. But they're always there if you have a question. And, you know, I wouldn't, you know, like, anything on the internet, like, you take it as it comes. I mean, I wouldn't take anything as, like, medical fact. But it's a great sounding board to see, like, what's happened to other people. So, and it's also very supportive for it. You know what I mean? You don't feel great and you put in there, I don't feel great. And people will also, like, understand you. And then, and they're there when your family isn't there because they can't
understand,
you know, they can't take and understand, like, what you're going through. So yeah. So if you find that you don't have anywhere to turn and you suspect something, go to the group and they can probably more than likely, like, point you in some direction, like, go see this or this organization, or hold on, like, the door there.
So now the question I have is, so you opted to do the double. Now, how long, so did you have to go, after you did the double, you went through your radiation and chemo treatment. How long did you have to wait before you could get your boobs done?
Oh, okay. Well, what happened was the timeline was this. So it was COVID. So what happened was I was frantic because I got diagnosed in January, but I needed to find a team. I was really adamant about finding the right team after what my mom went through, right?
Right.
So all the distress and everything. So I was doing that, like, and meanwhile, like, so yeah, so I went to, and it takes a while to get these appointments and things like that. So I was going January went to February, February to March, and they were like, we're going to shut down the operating room. We're going to shut down the operating room, whatever. And I was frantic. I didn't, because I the one, I like, it was like a week away from shutting down the operating room. And the doctor that I was talking to, I trusted her, but she wanted to just only do she only wanted to do a unilateral mastectomy. She wasn't like, she just didn't believe in doing the double. Like, she was giving me all the statistics or whatever, and she was like, and so I didn't feel, I was okay with it, but I mean, I was gonna go with the double. But the thing is, like, I looked, it's a team, like, it's breast surgeon and plastic surgeon. So I and the thing, because of the whole like Tuskegee experiment and stuff like that, I was adamant about finding a plastic surgeon that had worked with Black women, because keloids were the things and stuff like that. So I was always looking at their portfolios, and I looked at the portfolio of her team plastic surgeon, and I wasn't happy with it. And then I asked them, like, do you have any more? So they were like, yeah, she worked with this other doctor. So then they gave me that portfolio, and I looked through it, and I wasn't happy with that. And I was like, this is what you got. And so I walked away from there like in tears, because I was like, the things are going to shut down. I'm going to have an operation. And they were like rushing to get me in. Like, they gave me a big book of stuff to, like, no, like, this hospital was on top of stuff. Like, my other hospital one that I got the surgery at just gave me like three sheets of paper, like how to get here, what floor, whatever. This other one was like, the night before you take a shower, this is gonna happen. It was a binder of stuff. And I just got like, I got like really, really nervous. And I was supposed to meet this other doctor like a day before the surgery or whatever. So, I talked to my friend, and I talked to the doctor. They were like, okay, so even if the hospitals get shut, the operating room get shut down, we can put you on medication until the operating rooms open up again, because it probably won't be, hopefully it won't be that long. So that's what happened was I wasn't happy with that person, but I did like just before the operating room shut down, I did find the person I was happy with, but it was too late to get an operation. And so I was on medication, and then I got my operation in June. So I got my operation first before everything. I got my operation in June, and that's when they found out that I would need chemo and radiation, because they saw that I had cancer in my lymph nodes. So yeah, so it depends on the kind of cancer you have too. Like, some people have cancer, like if they have a lump that's like, they might not want to operate if your lump is too large, because they go in and it's too large, it could spread the cancer. They don't know. So they will try to shrink it through medication first. So you'll get like chemo first to shrink, and medication to shrink your tumor as a before you. So it really depends on what kind of cancer you have. So my cancer was supposedly smaller and contained, so they could do the operation. So they did the operation, and that's when they found that it was in the lymph nodes. And then that's when I was assigned to get chemo. So I got my operation in June, and then I had the rest of summer off, woohoo, because of my operation. And it was great, because it was COVID, but like, I could still go out in the park. It was great, you know what I mean? I spent all summer out in like the sunshine and seeing my friends and stuff like that, like out in the sunshine. So it was a good time. And then in September, I started my chemo, and then that was a good call too, because when you lose your hair, like, I had nobody to, I was inside the house. It was COVID, and then I was wearing hats. So the timing is like, if you're gonna like schedule cancer, like you schedule a C-section, that was perfect in my calendar. It was totally perfect in my calendar. Like, like the, so yeah, so the summer off, and then chemo, and then yeah, and then chemo was done by the holidays, by Christmas. I was December 15th, I was done. And then 2 months later, a month later, or whatever, I started radiation in January. And that was good too, because, with the burns and everything, you are, yeah, like, you're covered up and stuff
Most of
like
the
that.
winter time.
So yeah, so that was the perfect kind of timeline. Like, it was really like, it was kind of a dream. Like, and then with the radiation too, like, the thing is, like, I think when it comes to Black women's cancer journey, that people don't see or realize, a lot of Black women, like, what the journey looks like. So it's kind of like a mystery, and you're scared about it. So part of what, like, there's one group called For the Breast of Us or whatever. They try to document, like, they have women like submit photos of, their surgeries and stuff like that. And this is all happening like post-COVID, because before COVID I couldn't find it. And then one of the things that I wanted to do was like with my radiation, like I wanted, because nobody, like, it's like, well, what happens? Like, yeah, like I had 25 sessions of radiation, I think. And I know it was like maybe like three before the last one, like maybe like the 22nd one or whatever. That's when the burns happened. Like all of a sudden my skin just like crusted over. Like I couldn't
Right.
believe it. Like just perfectly, like where the radiation was, it just shows how perfect like the target was. And I started to take pictures, and I wanted to get it documented too. I was like reaching out to all these photographers, and nobody would like respond to me. I was like, you, I mean, I they didn't understand, like how like important, I think important it is. So I have some pictures and stuff like that. But yeah. So but I yeah, I was basically like. I mean, I was, it was like, I was like a KFC crispy, like extra crispy breast snack. I was just like, so, it was just so dark and burnt. And, yeah. And, so yeah. And then, but now today I am regular recipe. I'm all healed, regular recipe.
So,
So,
would you say, so basically you, if we kind of dismiss the COVID part, so you first had the surgery done, and then
yeah.
you went into chemo, and then you went into radiation.
Yes, that's right.
And so now, so you had to go through all of that before they could have a conversation about you getting your boobs.
Well, throughout that, I mean, like I'm seeing, because you go depending, I mean, if you decide to go flat, then there's no conversation really. You're just
Right.
you're out flat. But if you decide to get boobs, what happens is when you're in surgery, they remove your boobs. They put, I guess it can, well, it can depend, because some people I heard got their implants right away. But my doctor didn't do that. What he did was he gave me temporary boobs. They're called expanders. And so it was like a you could see like the outline of like you come out of surgery and you have tubes attached to you that drain out the fluid. And then you have, if you're getting like implants, then you have another tube, like the outline of like a it's like a temporary one called an expander. And what the expander does is that they fill that up with saline solution to expand the skin. They remove all of your breast meat from your breasts on the inside. So you have temporary boobs. And basically, like, what's fun about them is that they have metal in them. So if you forget, if you don't have any room on your refrigerator left anymore for your post-it notes, you can definitely just like stick a magnet on there and walk around, and you never forget a darn thing, because you got metal on your boobs, like right here, magneto. It's a little
Wow,
bit like
metal. Interesting.
it's a little bit like I mean, it's so minimal. I mean, but for some people, they're kind of uncomfortable. They're kind of, because they're like, they sit high and they're perky. They're a little bit like being a soldier in the movie 300. Like it's just like this huge like breastplate, like if you exercise, it's basically propping. You're like in a cobra, like an eternal cobra, if you ever do yoga or whatever. But yeah, so you get temporary boobs, and you go in like weekly or by however you decide with your breast surgeon, and he pumps them up. So yeah, so you're so I walk yeah so I walked around with temporary boobs. And then a year later I got them taken out, and I got right now I have implants.
Oh,
So
nice.
yeah, and I like the
So,
temporary boobs because they sat higher. But one thing I like people to know is that one thing about my doctors, like I think my doctor's cool. I love the office or whatever. But even when you're an advocate, like there can be missteps, because the implants that I got, like my doctor and I did not have a discussion about outcomes. Like I did, because I'm a joke. I do a lot of jokes or whatever. I did email her and I was like, so what am I getting? Am I getting double D's or whatever? Ha ha ha, whatever. And
Right.
then he see me back, email me back that he's gonna give me what fits, right? And the thing is, like the expanders sat higher. So
Right.
I like the so I was looking at those guys, I like what this fit. I was like, yeah, they want to fill these up, it's great. But the implants sit differently.
Oh.
So he put something in there, but it wasn't like I don't. I mean, clothing. I mean, it looks okay, but I want it a little bit bigger because, first of all, I think they look a little weird, like out of clothing. I think they look like pecs. I feel like I'd make like any 13-year-old lacrosse player jealous. Like it's just like they just look like pecs, and I just wanted something bigger, and everyone's like they look great, but I just don't like the idea. First of all, like a man decided like what my outcome would be, what my
Gotcha.
I mean, it's like it doesn't matter like if they look fine to you. It's just like he should not have made that decision for me. And then also too, I feel like I wanted them just a little bit bigger because like you have to stay in proportion to the size. So it makes it like if I gain weight or whatever, like is there just gonna be sort of flattened out as opposed to keeping myself like a little bit curvier, like if I had
Gotcha.
bigger. So it's like a hard, it's like it just like puts work into like how I want my image to be. So which gives me more homework or whatever.
Yeah.
So
Yeah, see, I hear
not
what
to
you're
be
saying.
mean, but it's just like, I just want to be comfortable
I hear what you're
with my body,
saying.
and I want to rule my body. You know what I mean? Like,
Right.
so
You didn't go through all of this to be like, eh, about what you got.
yeah. And the thing is, like, you can go back and always get surgery, but the problem is, like, once you have radiation in your skin, like that skin is damaged.
Yeah.
So you don't really want, like, it's a very like tricky thing to go back and do the cuts because you don't know how the wound, how it's gonna heal. You don't know if it's gonna stretch anymore, like, if it's soft enough. So, so he like, yeah, he said he can like make it a little bit bigger, but we both know like it's a risk to be vain. Like, so it's like,
Right.
do I really want to do that? I'm not that vain. It's like I have a lot of anxiety about this. About the surgeries, and so I'm just living with it. But in my mind, I'm telling people like, just know your outcomes. Like we should have drawn it out a little bit longer, like done more to put the like made the boobs bigger, like with the when it was the expanders were in there, like put more saline solution in it, and yeah, they and people need to know how they're gonna sit on your body.
Gotcha. And so now, would you say that you are in remission, cancer-free? Like, how would you categorize where you are right now in your ca cancer journey?
Okay, well, that's the thing. Okay. My doctors say I'm cancer free, but I don't consider myself cancer free because when my mom was deemed cancer free, and then 5 years later her cancer turned metastatic, and she died because of it 5 years later. So the 5 year mark is a very significant milestone for anyone with cancer. So
Okay.
I am 21 was when I stopped radiation. So I think like 26 or whatever, I'll stop worrying. But I'm on the thing is like the journey, the chemo and the radiation was a breeze. Was a breeze. Chemo was like some people do chemo and they're like in there for hours. Like I was in chemo for like 90 minutes to 2 hours. Like by the time I was out of chemo, by the time my Starbucks order arrived, like it was just so such a quick turnaround. And then radiation too. Like I only had that like the burns like the last like this like the last three sessions or whatever, and they were manageable by the creams and stuff like that. So I didn't have a lot of pain. But then after that, they put me on this hormone therapy. Oh, this hormone therapy has been the worst because my cancer is estrogen fed. So they are taking the estrogen. They're aging me like, like that black girl magic. That black girl magic is like I'm losing, like and skin is sagging, everything like, but it's not the vanity of it. It's the fact that I've lost mobility because of just my muscles have just like atrophied and cramped up. Like I've lost the ability to walk. I have a limp. For the last 3 years, I've had a lot of issues. Like I've been working just like walking, learning how to walk, being able to ride a bicycle. Like it is like in order to get around, like it's hard. It's been so hard for me to walk that I use the e-bikes in New York City. Are you in New York?
No.
Oh.
I'm in Boston.
My boss, okay, yeah, so we have these motorized bikes, and so I hop on those just to get around because it's hard for me, and I'm also I have accessorized and stuff like that because it's just hard for me to walk. Like it's, you know, like it's near paralysis. I like there were times when my legs would lock up. There were times when it took me like 20 minutes to just like stand up. I couldn't engage my glutes. There were times like if I were on public transportation, I'd have to try to make sure I got up, stood up, like maybe two or three
Well,
stops before
before, yeah.
I would miss my stop. So yeah, it's been so through acupuncture, like I've done every acupuncture, swimming, like aerobics, some aerobic classes, yeah, Pilates, yeah, acupuncture has been great. Chiropractor, like physical therapy, like, you know, I've done it all. And then I also have like yeah, so I don't consider myself cancer free because that medicine is kick ass. I got a bone density test, and I just found out that I have osteoporosis from that medication, and that in order to and I've been exercising. It's not like I've not been exercising, and in order to curb it, I have to take a shot twice a year, and that the side effects is that the shots will affect my jaw, and then that means that it could affect my jaw, but it means that I have to get all my dental work, any kind of dental work that I wanted to get done, I have to get it done now because I can't get it done after that shot because it could ruin my jaw. So I do have, like, I've been wanting to get like my teeth aligned. I was in a car accident, so I recently got I was on my bike, my electric bike, and I got hit by a car.
Oh my
It wasn't,
goodness.
yeah. So my teeth got knocked out. So I had these are caps and not temporary caps. So I have to get all this dental work done, finished, right, before I get this shot. And then I have also like alignment issues, and I didn't have the money for alignment issues, so now I gotta hurry up and get the alignment issues done, like whatever, beg, borrow, steal to get the alignment issues done, because after I get this shot, I could risk like messing up my jaw. Yeah, so it's crazy. So I don't consider myself cancer free because I could just stop this pill because it's giving me all these side effects and aches and stuff like that. But I risk the cancer
Coming back.
coming back. I have to be
Right.
vigilant about being on that drug. So I don't consider myself cancer free. I'm fighting every day. It's worse with that drug than when I had, like when I was on chemo, I was like afraid of being on chemo because I was like, well, you know, I don't want to gain weight and I don't want to lose energy. But that was the opposite. Like I didn't gain weight and I was so hyped up on those cancer drugs. I was super hyper. I mean, like I'd be a little fatigued after the day after, but I was super hyper. I was like, if America knew how hyped up you could get on those drugs, everybody would want cancer. It was crazy. Like I was just like, you know, like up at 9, and by 9:05 I had to clean the apartment. You know what I mean? It was just crazy.
Right.
So that's where I am, where I consider myself when it comes to where I am with the cancer.
So
I'm still
basically,
battling it.
so once you hit that 5-year mark, is it pretty much like every 5 years, or is it, you know, you're still kind of going year by year?
That's what they say, right? That's what they say. But my doctor was like, she kind of like said it under her breath. She was like, yeah, but I think it'd be good to, like, you know, 10 years or like the rest of your life, which like, so yeah, so she's like talking about the rest of my life being on this drug. So you know, and the thing is, like, I watched my mom die, so I was like, I'm like, I just throw everything at me, you know what I mean? Just throw it all at me. Because I don't want my mom's life to be in vain, and I don't want what I know about this to be in vain. Like, that's why I started it, my platform, Strong Black Boobs, is because, you know, it's like, it's about Black women uplifting Black women. It's like, I don't cry anymore about my mom's boobs. I don't cry about my boobs, but I cry about all the Black women who are dying needlessly because they don't know that they are at risk. Like, it's just not fair. It's just not fair. It's just not fair. You shouldn't have to die because your boobs are Black. Like, you should know that you are at risk. And if you decide not to do breast self-exams, that's fine. But at least you know that you are at risk, that you be watching your boobs. And then, and it doesn't have to be just you. It could be your partner too. People's partners catch their cancer as well. Like, you can make it like a fun night. At least, you know, like one night a month, like people are getting busy, right? So yeah, so that's why I started Strong Black Boobs. I mean, like, and the reason why, I know it's a crazy name, but like, the reason why I call it Strong Black Boobs is because, you know, it wasn't available. Weak white boobs. Ba-da-ba.
Oh my gosh.
No, because, you know, because just outcomes just aren't great for Black people. And I think that, like, across the board when it comes to cancer, like, there should definitely be, like, an organization called Strong Black Balls for men. Then, and then when I heard that Al Roker had prostate cancer, I tweeted at him that he should start an organization called Strong Black Buttholes.
Oh my God.
Yeah. But the thing is, like, I found
did
that
you hear back?
No, he didn't. I think he missed an opportunity. But the thing is, like, Strong Black Buttholes, that it's not, actually, that's rectal cancer. So I don't know my way around back there. So I got to figure out what you can call Strong Black Prostates. But I started using comedy to reach people because, first of all, it was social media. Like, social media was, at that time, like, when I got cancer, it was like, that was like the thing that was illuminating all of the injustice. Like, it was, because it was at the time of George Floyd, it was, you know, Standing Rock, everything, all the messages were being amplified through social media. So, like, I'm going to get on social media, but I'm going to use what I know, which is comedy, because we don't like to talk about cancer, but we like to laugh. So I got on social media, and the thing is, like, the algorithm just doesn't like me. It just doesn't like, it's just not, the algorithm is not fair because it's created by people, you know, who already have biases. So like, I got shadow banned when I tried to circulate a photo of just my side boob with my scars on it, my radiation scars. Mm. And it was a nice picture. It wasn't like, it wasn't a graphic, like,
card. You are like flashing, like, here, look at my boobs.
Yeah, it was a stylized photo, and I got reprimanded by that. And I got so angry that I went on TikTok, because that's who banned me. I went on TikTok and I looked under breast cancer awareness to see what came up. And wouldn't you know, I found a woman that was full frontal with her scars, big scars, like she had, like, still had ample breasts, right?
Right.
And she flopped them right in front of the camera, right? And you could see the scars and everything. And she was like, and she had posted like 4 days before mine, and she was getting tons of views. But the difference between the two of us was that she was white. And so I got so pissed off. And then not only did they shadow ban me for that, but I had done, like, in chemo, I had done like those dance challenges. Mm. And I did one with Charli D'Amelio, the their top TikTok star. Yeah, and everybody was like, oh my God, like, you know, like, you could see the chemo drip and everything. And I'm bald. And everyone's like, oh, Charli. They were like tagging her, like, Charli should see this or whatever. And so they went back in my history and they took that down and said I violated their terms. But yet they didn't take down. I did the exact same thing with Alicia Keys. They left Alicia Keys up and they took down Charli D'Amelio. So I, of course, was angry. And I, like, wrote to everybody, like the ACLU or whatever, Human Rights Commission, just to get it on record. Like, you know, like, look at what these people are doing. So social media. So, yes, so I started doing comedy. And since then, it's been, you know, it's been cathartic for me too. You know, I've had so many boobs in the last 3 years, from real boobs to no boobs to magnetic boobs to my implants to my puppet boobs.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So my puppet boobs. So yeah, so I have puppet boobs, and because what happened was somebody gave me boobs. Right, somebody gave me some felt boobs. She makes body parts for cancer patients, and she gives them to cancer patients. So she was kind enough, I don't think she's doing it anymore, she was kind enough to send me a pair of boobs, right? So I call these my backup boobs, right? It got me started, right? Like, I've had more boobs in the last 3 years than a lactating chihuahua, right? So I got these boobs, right? And I call them, they're my backup boobs, right? And I call them Harriet Boobman and Rosa Peaks, right? Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, and I make videos with them. Like, we have I do parodies. I do, like, I'm like the, I try to be like the, what's the name? Weird Al Yankovic.
Oh, yeah.
So I did a song called Bad Boobs under Donna Summer's Bad Girls, whatever, Bad Boobs. And then, you know, they were animated and jumping around or whatever. So, yeah, so I do that. And I also do, I did another one called Stevie Wonder song, Happy Birthday. I turned it to Happy Boob Day. So about breast cancer awareness, and yeah, and so, and then for these are, you know, these are where the we are with these. I do I'm trying to create something called On Golden Boobs. So it's like
Oh yeah, the
the
Golden Girls.
yeah, all the girl, the Golden Boobs. But this one is like, we're the Spice Boobs.
Oh.
I'm Ginger Spice. I'm Baby Spice, and I'm scary.
Oh my
And so,
gosh.
I did a song parody called a couple of song parodies called "One Is Wanna Be," like "If You Wanna Feel My Boobies." I did that song, and then I did Spice World, "People of the World, Spice Up Your Boobs." So yeah, so it's Ginger, Baby, Scary, and unfortunately, Posh Spice and Sporty Spice aren't available because they're busy in another bra.
Oh
So
my
yeah.
God,
So
that
yeah,
is.
so yeah, so I do stuff like that, and then I also do I've been doing skits and stuff like "What Scares a Black Woman," and you know, and I got like a ghost t chasing me around my apartment and around my building, and then what scares them is that in scary movies, well, what scares them is that yeah, like we die 40% more of our white counterparts, and then in scary movies you die 100%. So whatever. So that was like the punchline to it. And then I actually have been winning awards, because the thing is,
Nice.
like, if I'm not getting recognized, if it's hard to get through the social media side of it, then I am trying to like get recognition from, you know, like credible people within the health field, as well as the arts field, and public service field as well. So I won two digital health awards for I do something called the areola monologues, where I animate breast, and basically it's out of the instead of the mouth out of the mouth of babes, it's out of the mouth of boobs, and they basically, the breasts are bandaged and they're talking, and they like, and I use like popular like funny things that they say, and so that's the areola monologue. So I did one where I used Missy Elliott's music, "Can You Work It? Can You Work It?"
Oh,
So
yeah.
you need to work them boobs. And then yeah, and then I did another one to basket boobs, which is like a takeoff on March Madness. I did Mammary
Oh.
Madness, and I showed 12 different signs using basketballs. Like, you know, you have two balls, and then like one of the things, like, you need to watch if your breast looks different from the other, so that one basketball is all sunk in, or
Oh,
you know, or they're two,
yeah.
one has veins on it, or one has like stuff dripping out of it. So it was called Basket Boobs. So I went for that one, and then I just recently won an Anthem Award, which is part of the Webbies. It's their social impact side of the Webbies,
Oh,
and so I
great.
won a bronze for stunt marketing, because I was Black Breast Cancer Barbie, and I basically did a Barbie thing about breast cancer awareness. So yeah, so you know, and I do other things too. I do titty protesting, like I stand out in Times Square with signs. You know, like Halloween, I had a sign that says like, "Mammograms aren't scary," or like during the election, I had this, like during our election, I stand in front of like voting areas, and I do this in bandages, because I want to take away the invisibility of the disease for women and women of
Yeah.
color especially. And yeah, and I hold up signs, and the signs on election day say, what was that? "Well, we are the 8008%." So boobs or whatever, boob 8008.5% boobs or whatever. So yeah, I do stuff like that, or I go to Times Square, and I have a sign that says like, "I will take your free comedy ticket if you let me tell you my statistics on breast cancer." So fun. Or I stand next to an Elmo, and I'll go like, "This Elmo is fake, and so are my boobs due to breast cancer."
Oh my gosh.
So yeah, so I try to have fun with it.
Yeah, you do make it seem like it's fun. So, you do a lot of social media. So where can people find you on social media?
Hashtag strong black boobs. Strong black boobs. Yes.
That's where they can find you on social media. And so I always ask all of my guests, what's one thing that makes you feel magical?
When I can help other women of color, when I can save black boobs, that's what makes me feel magical. When I know that my work is going to save other people's lives, that makes me feel magical.
Awesome. Well, it's been great hearing your journey. I'm grateful that you have made it to this point, and I'm hopeful that you will hit year 5 and year 20 and year 30, and cancer will just be something that's in your rear view mirror.
Thank you so much, Kim. It was such a pleasure to speak with you. I just wanted you to know, and I want to thank you because anytime you shine a light on Black breast cancer, I like to say this is my mantra. Let me just make sure I say it right. So, thank you very much for helping to shine a much needed light on Black breast cancer awareness because it's like a scene out of the classic movie, It's a Wonderful Life. Every time a woman of color gets to share her Black cancer journey, it feels like a gift that keeps on giving. With your support, someone out there might get a chance at a pair of healthy boobs and a brighter future. So I know that this piece will make a difference, and I'm truly grateful and honored to have been a part of it.
Yeah, thank you again. You've made light of it, and I think so many of us get so serious when you get a diagnosis of that. But you're right. It's like if the attitude is what gets you through all the other malarkey that you're trying to navigate with that.
Exactly. So I want to thank you from the bottom of my boobs.
Okay. Well, enjoy the rest of your day, and thank you again for being on the show today. So, Magic Makers, get your mammograms and monthly check your boobs. And usually they recommend you checking your boobs around the time you get your period. You can make it the first of the month, you can make it on the full moon, whatever it is, but at least at once a month, you're making sure you are checking your boobies. All right, enjoy the rest of your day, Magic Makers.
Thank you for listening to the Fit Girl Magic Podcast. If you've made it this far, yay. I'm thinking you enjoyed the show. Let's continue the conversation on Instagram. You can find me at Kim Jefferson Coach. In order for me to keep sharing this message, do me a favor and leave me a 5-star review on iTunes. While you're there, don't forget to subscribe so that you won't miss an episode. New episodes are available every Wednesday. The Fit Girl Magic Podcast is intended to provide you with tips, tools, and strategies that will help you make better decisions about your health. I really appreciate your feedback and your support. Thank you so much.